for listening to Black Women Are Scary, the podcast that celebrates people of color writing horror. We continue with our Flash Fiction Frenzy, where each week we feature a new guest, talk about the season, and share short, spooky stories. Today I'm speaking with Sarah and Monica of Bitches on Comics. So let's lean in and listen to some scary women. In the movie that like all the lights go out or this happened and like everyone starts looting, and I'm like, I don't think it's like the lights go out and then we like 5 minutes later we're all looting. Like yeah. It takes a minute. It happens, but yeah, it's not the, you know, we've had brownouts and like some people just had parties, like can we see some of that? It's not immediately like the lights are out, crash, boom, steal the TV. Like I'm just like, what is going on?
Yeah, like what's the point of that if the power's out? Why are you stealing a fucking television?
I don't know. You know what I'm talking about, right? Like you've seen that. Yeah. You're like, what
I've
is
seen
this
it before, and I'm just like, that would not be a thing. It would not be a thing. I think honestly a lot of people would probably be worried about getting back to their families, getting back to their houses, and just like holing up and trying to figure out what else is going to happen. I would love to see something centralized like that, of just being like, what happens to like these folks who are like living in like a barrio or like a ghetto, and like they're using like their own like mutual aid circuits to like figure out like how they're going to protect their own communities. Maybe not with like violence, but figuring out if they're going to have enough food for everybody like on the block, because that solidarity does exist, you know?
And it does happen.
And it does happen, like even today, like, you know, people always think that because like we live in like this highly individualistic society, a lot of that individualism comes from a place of privilege because they can afford to be individualistic in this world.
That's
the case for those who are marginalized that need to rely on each other for mutual aid in order to survive. Where does that fit in after disaster? And how does that look outside of like pilfering in order to survive? Like,
right. And so what I love about the stories that we've produced is that it's all that, right? It's all this mutual aid. It's all the way like people like did an about face and decided like, okay, we're going to do this now so that we can deal with, you know, we're going to make up these new systems so this doesn't happen again. Or it's all about mutual aid. It's all about everything that you just said. And most of the stories are bittersweet. You know, it's not comfortable for the protagonist. There's usually some kind of loss, something that they can never go back to. I'm thinking of like the Metamorphosis of Marie Martin. Like she did a great thing. She repaired the coral reef. She also, in a way, died. Like, she doesn't get to go back to her life. But she transformed, she transcended. Like it kind of depends on your perspective. Like it's fine. Her daughter's fine. You know, the conversation I had with, Nicole after that was like, no, it was a good thing. And there's nothing to be sad about. You know, that was her perspective of like, she transformed, and because of that transformation, everyone else around her was able to level up. And I was like, that's true. And also, she doesn't get to spend time with her daughter, though. That's real, because she's fish now.
comes at a cost.
That's a real thing, you know. But that was all, you know, that's very much looking at, like, we have this disaster thing happen, and how are we going to repair with the lexicographer? You know, Akeem also talks about, when I spoke with him, yeah, he's like, if this was a movie, it would be a disaster film, and no one ever really thinks about the horror and disaster. So I think that's funny that you'll have disaster films, but they're not considered horror movies.
Right, like 2012.
And, the day after tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm like, that shit's scary.
Yeah, or like Wave or title. Like sometimes it'll just be one word. They'll just be like volcano, all these things. And I'm like, but this is awful. I don't know if I understand the difference between this and like World War Z. Like these are both disaster, a kind of disaster. One is just, you know, has happened. Like people have drowned in huge tsunamis, you know, and I'm sure it felt like, you know, that this could easily be a horror movie. I think it's interesting that we separate that, and I don't know why we do that, even though if for a lot of horror storytelling, disaster is innate. It's like intrinsic in what's happening.
It's also kind of wild how many people watched a day like The Day After Tomorrow and 2012 and any number of these movies, and like it really just it didn't they were like, oh, that's like a fiction world that lives in fiction. And you're just like, no, it's like weather's doing wild things right now, you know, like it's actually a problem. And they're just like, well, Jake Gyllenhaal's got it, so I don't think we need to be worried about it.
Yeah, I love the solutions in those movies, and I'm one of those people who will like I will watch those movies. I think they're so much fun. Like because they just seem like a ride at like in Disney World. Like I'm just
And
like I'm
yeah,
not
it's like
looking
the
at the
buildings are collapsing, and you're just like, wow, this is fun.
Wee! Yeah, we're gonna build a big ship, like whatever. I just think that the typically the like the solutions for those are so funny, and it's always like one man in a spaceship, or one man on a boat, or one man will go to the thing in the center of the whirlpool and set off something, and it'll freeze it, and like the planet is safe.
Yeah, wasn't
And
like
I'm
Armageddon,
like,
like in Armageddon, they literally just go and like punch the asteroid or whatever.
And it's always like some weird white man scientist, like an Independence Day. It was Jeff Goldblum and well, who is it? Randy Quaid. Like, I don't know. Or
Randy
Boston
Quaid was
Beach. It was
the
Pierce
Vietnam
Brosnan.
vet.
Yeah. I'm just like, this. Okay. All
Yeah,
right.
there's a formula, and it's always the same dude, and his solution always involves putting a thing inside a thing that's gonna blow it up or freeze it.
Right,
And
and
then the one with
he's always like very messy. Like he doesn't live life appropriately. He's like a deadbeat dad or something. He's
Yeah. And you're
this
like, this
career.
deadbeat dad is going to get us out of this,
And
everybody.
somehow it's gonna repair the relationship with his son.
Right,
What did I
right.
just recently watch where that was so that was it? Oh my God, who
That's
was it again?
basically it. No, that's really it. Like, dad never came to my important like events or whatever, but here he is
He's
saving
saving the world.
the
Moonfall.
world.
Moonfall had that same thing, that same arc. Robert or Patrick Wilson was the deadbeat dad.
Like, what the fuck?
I
Are
am
they all
dying.
written by deadbeat
Deadbeat
dads?
dads almost, right? It's like, oh my
Literally.
God, the glitch in the Matrix I just saw. Like, it's all
Like, it
the
was Patrick
deadbeat dads.
Wilson and it was Halle Berry, which is the only reason I showed up.
Right,
And
yeah.
it was something where like the moon is crashing into the earth, and like,
Oh, yeah, as you
there's
do.
these scenes. Oh my God, there's these scenes. Oh, they're looking, but like oxygen is literally like gravity is disappearing, and people are like floating, and the moon is like coming to people, like the moon, and the gravity is like. And oxygen is going, and people are like fighting for like resources. And I'm like, the moon. I couldn't. When they were fighting for like an oxygen tank and having a they were having a car chase and a gunfight, and I just thought it was
What?
hilarious because
Right
I was
then.
just like,
All right. All right. All right, Kenneth.
the moon is coming to your face right now.
Yeah, isn't
All
it
right.
so much just like them being like, oh, if there's not like cops and military and government, then like everything will be chaos. And it's like the chaos part is the moon coming into the planet. Like, that's
I'm like, I
the
can
chaos.
see the moon and things are like floating up to it.
And I'm like,
Like
I'm gonna get this television. Like,
it's
right.
we're done. And so like because I okay, so that's one view. And then there's what's that one? It was written by the same guy who did Three Body Problem. So that the Chinese sci-fi writer, and it was called like Wandering Earth. And here's another look at a disaster, right? We are now living at the core of the planet. We can no longer live at the surface of the earth because it's frozen. And so it begins with the worlds that we've made, all of us, like There's no more like countries, really. Like there's an alliance of all the people because we're trying to figure out how to like, we have to like move, we actually have to move Earth. I forget why. He has a background in science, so like the science feels sound. Like yeah. He's got a really good way of explaining where you're like, yeah, that's exactly how we would
move
the planet out of the orbit and would it like, I was like, okay. And so then the whole movie is just like this crazy tech thing. All hands on deck. So you have like different languages going on of like, you know, all these different nations like pooling their resources and also like life at the core of the earth. And then the suits and stuff that people put on to like work on the surface. And so that's another one where planets are getting close and whatnot, but like the way people respond is so different because everybody is like in it to win it. It's just so happening that like most of the storytelling is from this one like Chinese crew. So it's in Mandarin, but like there is an acknowledgement of other people doing their part too as we have to like move Earth.
Like literally we have so many hints and so much time to prevent this, but no.
Yeah.
Now we have to move the fucking
Now we Earth. Have to move the whole planet.
Now we have to move the whole planet because, but like, this is after we were living in the center of the Earth. Like we've already moved down. We're levels down. We can no longer inhabit the surface. It is frozen. And so half of it takes place in the center. And then when they go up to the surface to like do certain work to begin this move, like you're starting in the middle of the story. When you see like our planet frozen and like folks, like there's just like blocks of ice with like bodies still in it, like people that didn't make it because there was like, this is where it flooded and then froze over. You know, it's like that same kind of thing of like, to take it back to horror, Resident Evil, like going to Vegas and Vegas is all like under sand and there's zombies and stuff. Like it's the same idea, only it's just like this natural disaster you're looking at. And it was just so terrifying to look at. It's such a like wild concept, yeah. but like the people in it are so like real and grounded that I forgot that like the concept is that we have to move the planet. That sounds ridiculous. But like I was like invested in these people's stories and like characters so died familiar. And I was like, oh like, my God, we're not gonna move the planet in time. But like, you know, this doesn't really even make any sense.
Yeah, but that's a good movie whenever you're just like I read Superman comics. I'm just like, I believe it. I believe in you, Superman. Like,
yeah. It's really about obviously it's about character.
Yeah, I was gonna say, have you all, I mean, I don't know if anybody's read this, but the book Tinder is the Flesh, which is like a horror book by a Argentinian writer. I forget what the name is, but it's a really great book. But I wanted to bring that up in after disaster context because A, it's a really good book, but also it's about kind of like a food supply disruption disaster. So they find out that all of the animals are like toxic, so like we can't eat animals anymore. And so the solution to that is for them to breed a very specific kind of person that's like given no personality or whatever, and we just start eating people basically. That's Whoa. The beginning. That's the first part of the book.
Like, oh my God.
So that's the disaster, right? Like that's the beginning.
We're cannibals. Like, yeah, that sounds bad.
So the main character is somebody who works in the meat plant, right? But it's like a fascinating thing because it's like, honestly, things don't change that much, right? And like, there's like this, but it's like, it's written, I believe that the person who wrote this must have been a vegan because like, as a vegan, I was like, yep, like I get it. But like, there's this whole idea of just like, they will just replace it, right? Like, it's like the needs of industry just continue even after this disaster. And I thought that was what was so fascinating about it was like, oh, even after this like agricultural disaster, and now we don't know how we're going to feed everybody, the way that what we do is like just to keep the machine running, right? You know, and just finding a more and more like gradually increasingly exploitative way to do it. quit. It is a very bleak book. It will definitely like be upsetting. And like, it was a book that whenever I read it, I was just like, for some reason, you know, even with that setup, you're convinced that you're going to get a happy ending at the end of the story. And it's just absolutely the fuck not, right? So it's just a really good one. But I was thinking, everybody should read that. It's a short book, but it is devastating. But it is also...
What an endorsement. It's a short book and you will cry.
You will. I mean, it's like, you will be very messed up by that book because it's like the cruelty of how we treat animals. And it's like, but the cruelty of how we treat each other just becomes completely interchangeable in the book. And like, that is like, you know, wow. Like, but you know, there's, it's just kind of just one of the bleakest things I've ever read, but yeah, it is a masterpiece.
And you said that the author is from Argentina?
I believe so. Let me look it up because I'm pretty sure.
Just a segue into the second question of like, what is the role in like when you're reading something from marginalized communities? Not to say that the Argentinian person is marginalized, but I do think like the role of disaster, at least for me in producing these stories, is was addressed very differently than like these bigger productions that we're talking about, where like the cop is the guy or like the deadbeat dad, you know, like even the protagonist is somebody like entirely different once you're dealing, especially with since so many of the authors are from the place where the disaster has happened, right? Like they live there and they're like, I'm iterating on a lived experience with the flood, with the drought, with the fires, with the whatever,
and
the
that's supply chain almost right know? Now
so I do think that changes things. Like, what do you think or what have you seen, and especially since you have Bitches on Comics and you are publishing, you know, writers from writing from a particular lens?
Yeah, Monica, what do you think?
I did have a thought, and this circles back. I'm sorry, I can't get away from zombies sometimes, but that's just me being a horror nerd. But I didn't mention George Romero and his perspective on like American capitalism, specifically with Dawn of the Dead and like everything happening within an abandoned mall. I've been obsessed with watching a lot of like videos about people exploring abandoned malls, abandoned amusement parks, abandoned places that generated a lot of wealth. And I think in that like I think about like general decline of Western civilization, because that's been like a theme lately. Like, I remember one day I like actually looked up to see like how long do civilizations last, and it was like, hold on, wait, there's like an actual number, like some, like it's actually like a Google answer, and it was hilarious. 340 years is the recorded, and then I was like, how old is the United States? 245 years old.
Yeah.
So we got a century. You're just like doing the math.
Just comparatively, because like George Romero made the first Night of the Living Dead like in the 60s, right? So like this was also during a time where, you know, when he chose Duane to like lead that movie, this was also during a time of like civil rights. This was also during a time where like Black actors were literally only seen in films as either the help or really racial, like racist caricatures of like Black folks or whatever. But here he was playing like a hero.
Oh yeah, it's stunning even now.
Exactly. And like thinking back to like what you said about like, you know, disaster hit like after slavery ended and then reconstruction like happened.
Yeah.
That everlasting fear of like once society collapses for a lot of like weird white supremacists is that people of color will inherit like the world, right? And I think about like how that lead character, after disaster did happen, he was the hero and was saving everyone, whereas like everybody was dying, but he was still murdered by the cops at the end. Yeah. And I think about like that in perspective of just like everything that's going on now and how there's been, and of course I'm going to talk about abortion, but how there's like been such a like push to eradicate like abortion rights within the country because of like this everlasting fear of not providing enough white babies in the world to prevent immigrants from coming over and replacing the numbers because of like our rapid birth decline within the United States, and like how there's all these insidious systems that are in place that could be considered to be Orwellian to prevent like whatever this so-called disaster that exists within the homogenous groups, like and within the hegemony, essentially within the westernized hegemony that like thinks that if they are outnumbered, then they would become a minority. But then the question is like, are minorities treated bad or something, you know? Because then that would throw like their theory into like, you know, if everybody's equal, then it shouldn't matter if like, there's more brown folks than white folks, you know? And there's actually a book called The Birth Dearth, which is not horror, but I guess it can be considered horror.
It sounds scary.
Yeah.
He wrote it. And I can actually, hold on. It's a book by Ben Wattenberg, and it's literally about, Ben Wattenberg was, he consulted presidents in the past, at like, Reagan and shit like that. And it's pretty much about like racism and how to maintain the white hegemony by continuing
it's like a how-to guide
infants. He basically talks about like if there is like uncontrolled reproductive rights, white people as we know it would no longer be the majority within the country, and that in itself is like an after disaster like manual for white supremacists who are concerned about like losing any type of power. And it's pretty much about like the insidious like evils of like racism and how it's not necessarily just like prejudice against other people, but how it is a structured system and how that system will go on to like control others like even after disaster happens. It's something that is indoctrinated into people to replicate it even after like the worst could possibly happen. And so I think that's why we're initially seeing all of this stuff happening to restrict people from having choices over their own reproductive health care, because the fact is that the majority of abortions that are performed in this country for the demographics are white women, and that is like an actual like fact, you know. So yeah, sorry, I just went off on a tangent, but I definitely wanted to
not really that. Though because I feel you know
because
I think you know what struck me about when you're speaking is that like the we are living in after disaster. Mm-hmm. So everything that we're doing now is also like, is a manual, is a how-to guide, or is an insight into both individually and then as a nation, what we, how we feel about and how we deal with disaster. Cause that is where we are, right? Like, and I was talking about this recently with a friend of mine. She's just like, somebody got COVID. And I was like, oh, right. People are still getting COVID. It fell out of the news cycle. All the you know, the masking things have gone away. She's like, I didn't even, and I was like, yeah, I asked if I should get this next vaccine. And I couldn't get like a straight answer from anybody. Like, it's just like, it's like, oh, it's not a thing anymore. And I'm like, I'm not going to just forget that happened. And I do feel this push of this, like, that's over, let's go back. And I'm like, go back? I still have the gloves like from that I was using to shop at the grocery store. I still remember spraying down like you can't ask me to go back. Like, people aren't, I also was like, people aren't the same. People don't.
No.
I came out of quarantine with social anxieties I didn't have going in and had to like figure out how to like kind of get back to like what I feel like is myself. And like, I'm also noticing in interacting with people that people behave differently.
Yep.
And I'm like, this changed us. There's no going back. We need to address like, this was a disaster. And how do we come out of this? This needs to be a reconstruction. And like, no one using that language is like, it frustrates me to no end. Cause I'm like, this was a disaster. Okay. Like, This was historic, and it ended with an insurrection, like, you know, like 2020, like, I feel like for me, it was like quarantine, insurrection, death, 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 these things, book bans. Like, it's just like, this decade has been the decade of disaster, and we're only 3 years in. So this is what's kind of like resonating with me, Monica, as you were speaking about that, of just kind of like, oh, this is, we're in it right now. This, we are like post-apocalypse, which is why I want to see that in the storytelling as well. You know, like whenever they, those stories get produced that are like dealing with that nuance, I'm like, right. Yeah. It wouldn't be just alluding, because we know, because we've done it, because we're doing it. Like, I want you, like, be honest. Like, we don't have to, it's not a far-fetched thing anymore. We know what happens when all the lights go out, because it was dark a little while ago. Like,
yeah, you can see that if you look at, to me, looking at the pandemic, which is definitely still happening, right? And like, it's just, and you know, it's like everybody's like, no, it's not. And you're like, no, it is.
I think people, like, I think it is.
Like, and then there's this idea for me that what happened whenever everybody went into quarantine, we basically saw that our entire system doesn't fucking work, right? And like, it's like, if you push on it a little bit, like, we had no preparation for this, like, and you could have seen it coming, like, it was in the news, like, already, because it was like, oops, we should be worried about this, like, several months before we got worried about it, right? And it's just one of those things. And it was just like minor, like when we're living in like this, you know, the constant news cycle, it's like stuff that just goes by the wayside. And then eventually you kind of get to this place where, yeah, we were all in quarantine, but we all also couldn't buy toilet paper. You know, it's like there's a supply chain issue that continues to be so broken because of the pandemic that it's just like mail takes longer. Like, everything is harder to get. There's less guarantee than ever that you're going to be able to buy groceries. Grocery stores are hijacking prices in this wild way because they're making so much money off of people's, like, directly off of people's suffering. There's so many more people unhoused than there were at the beginning of the pandemic. It's like, we just saw the way that our government doesn't work, and like, it can't work. Capitalism can't work. And I think that that was it. So like, that was like this moment where we all learned that. And so the way that the whole system has kind of cracked down and been like, oh, let's go after women's rights, let's go after this, like, let's go after that, you know, like, let's ban all of the books, like, Nazis, you know, like, they're doing this stuff that is them trying so hard to hold on to this system that is broken in a way that I just think that we almost have to totally rethink things. And everybody doesn't want to do that work right now because everybody is traumatized from the pandemic.
So. Yeah, no, there's real like pain and grief. There was no moment to just be like, oh, that happened and it sucked.
Yeah.
Which is why people are so aggressive now. I think that that's one of the reasons why like people are so easy to just like flip off the handle, you know?
Yeah.
But also just circling back to Station 11 and to like, you know, how that one kid like tried to burn down everything that was a part of that system that existed before we ended up post-pandemic in that world. It's just like, no, like we can't go back to like that. We can't go back to what made us end up here. Like we have to do something completely different.
Does disaster play any role in the writing that you guys do individually?
It doesn't often because, like, I don't know, but I did this, the story that I wrote that I remember being directly about, like, we start in meteor res whenever, like, a disaster has occurred and you're, like, hearing this person kind of reflecting back on the early days of it was Last Days of the Plague. And that one is in my collection, A Small Light and Other Stories. And it was also published in an anthology. I believe Pandemic Unleashed was the one. And I think, Wimoto, weren't you in one? It was like the one right after that. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was in one of the Unleashed volumes. I don't know if it was, it was just Unleashed Volume 2.
Oh, okay, got you. Yeah, totally. I was in one of them as well with The Last Days of the Plague, but it's collected in my short story collection. And it was basically just, I guess like the tiredness of it, like, you know, this person goes through, loses so much, sees horrific things all of the time, but it's like, it's over years, like this person is like, you know, in this version, the plague, it not, I mean, the plague almost like wiped out Europe, right? But like, it's like even worse here. Like, it's like the people who survive is like a very, very small number, as opposed to just like, you know, 80% of the population died or something like that. But it's like even more so. And the whole time she keeps like seeing death, like the actual like embodiment of death, right? And you just kind of see her like spiral. And then there's this part where like her ex-girlfriend like wants to like reach out to her, but she's just like, I'm literally not that person. Like, and to me, that was like, you get so tired from disaster. You get so tired from how much work it takes. Like, we've all been depressed as shit, right? Like over the last like bunch of years, because there's just kind of this constant influx of disasters. And the part where it's so preventable, you know, and it's just like, that's kind of what's like, you know, it's hard for people to talk about, but I just think that that is really what's hurting us right now. Like in many ways, like we're all still just like, wow, you know, we have to deal with like all of the things that all of the previous generations had to deal with, but also the fact that like, oh, like it could be end times like right now, right? You know, it's like the thing with history, right, is that like people do tend to survive. Like we haven't hit like an end of humanity yet, but
yeah,
if we're going to, now seems like it would be a time, right? Like there's a lot going on with climate change that's like very scary. So everybody is just, you know, very impacted by that. So I was thinking about like the energy it takes just to get out of goddamn bed in the morning, right? And stuff like that, and like how that would, that wears on people in our lives, but how like during plague times, like that, it's like you would just like seeing death like wouldn't even register to you anymore, right? Like it's just like kind of the way that it wears on you, I guess, is what that story was about.
The emotional toll. Monica, does disaster play any role in the work that you're making or have made?
I don't think explicitly.
Yeah, I was gonna say you do, you're very like interpersonal dynamics, I guess, is what I would say. And like that can mean that disaster is happening, but it's like very focused on the interactions between people from what I remember of everything I've seen of yours.
Yeah, no, you summarize that correctly. Yeah, I just feel like a lot of my work is just centralized around my experience as a queer Black woman in subcultural spaces. Like that's where I've always like operated, because that's where I operate. Just like these nomads living in this world where like a lot of things that we identify with have like aptly been like, or are in the process of being destroyed. So I think that it's not past tense for me.
It's like it's not after disaster, it's disaster. It's present continuous.
So I think that especially like with like Flesh and like Bitten a Tragedy and They Will Know You by Your Fruit and like Bathory, like all of those are just like I think they're all just stories that like are that just come together, as far as, because a lot of those stories like actually also have like the input of other Black queer women that I've met like in some cultural spaces. So it all just like accumulated into like these different like situations where they found themselves in. And it's all a part of this thing called the Vengeance Anthology that I've been working on. And it's just like, it takes place in different cities, in different subcultural spaces, but like ultimately their fates are intertwined because they experience the same type of behaviors no matter where they are in those places. So I guess in theory, like disaster fits, because like every time they have like these like interactions with people, whether it's like, you know, dealing with microaggressions or dealing with their own internalized anti-blackness or dealing with like their issues with like colorism or European beauty standards or any of that, like that actively like are small deaths that happen in between, because it's ultimately killing off like a part of themselves that they're trying to like eradicate in order to become a better person. So
I mean, it feels as like disaster is like you said, it's like it's you're inside of it. It's the backdrop to the work that you're making. And then there's minor disasters inside, you know, a larger disaster. Or at the very least, destruction. So perhaps, you know, there's something to think about the role of destruction in disaster, which I kind of like didn't really. I'm thinking of disaster being this kind of like, oh, it's like this force that you can't do anything about. But like, what about when it's intentional? What about when someone is like, or a group of people are intentionally like creating disaster on another group of people? Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. Let's do our drabbles.
All right. I named this one City of Rats because I like rats and I guess I like cities. The rain started weeks ago. While the news was still being reported, newscasters had a hell of a time making puns about the biblical flood that saw the construction of Noah's Ark. The jokes were bad. There was no Ark. The myth itself failed by forgetting how unprepared humanity always seems to be in a crisis. The cities had been on fire for days before black smoke had formed into toxic clouds, raining poison back down. Jenna lived in the streets after the eviction, and so had been uniquely positioned to evade the fires, as well to climb the deserted skyscrapers when the rain had begun. Watching the rats had helped her understand where to go during the worst of the crisis. Humans were in absolute chaos, clinging to material wealth, even when the only way to survive would have been to help one another. Yet the rats existed beyond human morality, and they helped each other. The fires had burned them, but the floods had brought new opportunities for food and shelter. Poisoning the rats again and again, humans had made them resilient to toxins that were now killing people by the thousands as water supplies were corrupted. Jenna finds rats easier to be friends with than humans are. She looks at a rat and knows that human morality was never accounting for them to begin with. Wasn't that the problem with ethics anyway? All of the things that it never dreamt of, like the perspective of rats? Jenna knows the complexity of humanity. She knows that not every human can be held to account for the actions of a few. She also knows that she saw so much horror in the last 3 months alone that even the unforgettable would eventually blur into a pool of chemical sludge in her mind. She's been spending time on the 20th or 30th story of this sparse, empty building, which is touched by neither fire nor water. A strange monument to the in-between places where humans spend their lives performing seemingly meaningless tasks that cause distant atrocities. Through the great window, she watches a man who she recognizes from TV, a rich man whose purpose of celebrity had been his money and his claim to a brilliance that the world never really saw much evidence of. How he'd come to be alone on a struggling little raft, Jenna could only speculate. Men like him were always fundamentally alone in their hubris. As he fights to stay afloat, a tide carrying hundreds of rats sweeps towards him. The rats are tired after hours of treading water, but more importantly, hungry. Jenna wants morality to intervene, to feel that he's getting what he deserves, but the concept of deserving or not deserving anything has always been a wonder to her. Even now, she's not sure what any of them deserve. Balancing the scales is impossible in a world underwater. There is only a man in terror and a legion of rats. Jenna hesitates only for a moment, watching them leap from the water to the man's raft and begin to overcome him. Then she closes the blinds, knowing that her relationship with the rats will be easier if she doesn't watch what comes next. She sits on the ground instead and shares a pack of crackers that she found in a desk with a rat. If morality exists, Jenna knows that there is no one more righteous than this rat, scrounging for food for her young. They share a moment of peace. Morality could not exist without beauty, but beauty could always exist without morality, and the world is somehow still beautiful today.
When the water came, it took us all by surprise, even though the weather folks and science folks and land activists folks had been screaming about it for centuries. Somehow, we were all still caught off guard. The waters took our favorite buildings and monuments and left us with mountains and skyscrapers. We scrambled to the top like we had been doing this whole time. Old habits. But then a miracle happened. We became tribes again. The mountain tribe, in the snowy peaks, the land lovers in the remaining buildings, and us, the water people. And I didn't even like the beach before, you know? But here I am. Here we are.
Yay!
That's it.
Yay!
Just a simple... I just gotta get used to water.
Yeah, it's like, here we are.
Yeah,
couldn't have said it better myself.
Water rats and water.
We've totally over time, so thank you so much for staying over with me. I do want to be mindful of your time and wrap it up. So speaking a little bit about Bitches on Comics to folks, like shout yourselves out here so people know where to find that, what to do with that, if they want to submit to that, you know. All the important information, please.
Yeah.
Here right now.
Bitches on Comics is our bi-weekly podcast where we interview people. Wiimoto has indeed been a guest last October. We might have you back this October, and or we might have you back in a month that is not October. Who knows?
Yes, that's fine.
We will someday have you back. That is what is important here. And great interview. I loved that interview. So it's always nice to talk to both of you. But yeah, you'll just listen to Bitches on Comics anywhere where you find podcasts. And we are truly everywhere. We have infiltrated the internet. And I have a short story collection called A Small Light and Other Stories, which you can get from Weird Punk Books, which is a great, great imprint. So if you like my book, check out everything else there. They have great covers. It's a beautiful little press and it's very punk. Oh, we interviewed the publisher same month that we interviewed Wiimoto. So if you want to listen to the Sam Richard episode of Bitches on Comics and then go check out Weird Punk, this is a good linear way to approach. And of course you can get my stuff on Amazon or whatever. If you do, obviously no judgment. We just always encourage, you know, it's an independent press, so pick it up from the independent press if you possibly can. And if not, that's okay. The ebook is available not through them. It should be available through Godless at some point, but it's not there yet. So yeah, everybody is like very buried in work, I think, pretty much across the board in the creative industry. So everything's taken a little while. But yeah, there's an audiobook on the way. And then of course you can listen to Decoded Horror Podcast, which you have been on and Monica has been on, where we adapt stories that are horror stories. And we have started the Tales from the Sapphire Bay Hotel series too. So it's like, you'll do like a few short stories and then you do like this bigger arc and then we go back to a few short stories. That's kind of like the method that we have. It's been on hiatus because everybody had to move across the country or whatever. And, it's coming back in May. So check that out. Anything else? It's like, maybe sarahcentury.com. Go to that, you know. And Monica, how about you?
What do I do? Yeah. Bitches on Comics and Decoded, and haven't really done anything too recently with Audrey's Revenge because we're still living through a pandemic and I am not comfortable filming anything. So but if you want to check out any of my work, you can go to audreysrevenge.com or you can check out some of my prior works. All of my films will be uploaded onto YouTube next month, including Bit in a Tragedy, because it's pretty much done with this festival run. It's had a pretty good run, actually.
I edited it, so
all of those films should be available via our YouTube channel, which is also called Audrey's Revenge Film. So you can check us out there on YouTube if you'd like to subscribe. I am still on the hellscape that is Twitter, so if you want to follow me, you can follow me at Audrey's Revenge. I did delete my Instagram page because Instagram is just a mall at this point.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you want to find me, like sometimes I check Twitter like maybe once a week. So if you want to follow me there, you can do that. But like, yeah, I try to not like.
Yeah.
There. I'm actually on a social media strike at the moment. So.
Oh my gosh. And it's so funny how this keeps coming back again and again and again and again with authors of just like a love-hate, mostly hate relationship with social media. Like I think you talk about like systems not working. I'm like, this used to be a thing where I could like talk to friends and have a good time and see joyful stuff. Mm-hmm. And now I hate it.
That crackdown happened where everybody was like, this is too good. Fuck this. Like, we got to get some ads in here and like, you know, like make everything be like really intolerable.
Yeah. And, like, the only thing that works and the only thing that like gets like responses is stuff that's meant to get a rise out of people. Right. Yeah, so it's like, it's like you can't even pull, like, I'm like, I just want to post this picture of like a brown skinned mermaid. Whee! You know? And like, it's like some likes, but it's like, if you do the thing where the people are arguing, like that's what people want. I'm like, I don't want to, it's like world star absolutely. All the time. I'm like,
yeah, cool. It's so insufferable.
We're not meant for that type of engagement 24/7. And no. I just preferably like to not do that. So yeah. So
if you want to get in touch with Monica, do what I do, text her.
Well, I just kind of feel like listen.
Alive. Yes, I am alive. Hello.
Yeah, no. Listen to Bitches on Comics. Yeah. Listen to Decoded. Like, mm-hmm. Interact with their work there.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Thank you for tuning in. Support Spooky Black Chicks with a tax-deductible contribution through the link in the bio, or by leaving a rate and review. Tune in next week for another episode in our Flash Fiction Frenzy with more new authors and new scary stories. Until next time.